Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Menachas Daf Zayin. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. In our previous shiur, at the end of Daf Vov Omid Beis, we had discussed the issue of someone who is unqualified for taking the kemitza. He's posel l'avoda. He takes the kemitza, the handful, from the meal offering. And then the question is there a point of return? Is there a tikkun? Is there chazora for this? So we saw a few opinions on the matter. And the last opinion that we saw was the opinion expressed by Rav Nachman, who spoke about that the taking of the handful is considered an avoda, but it's not considered complete until the handful is placed in a second service vessel, in the second kli shoreis. Therefore, until that point, if the posel had taken the handful from the original service vessel containing the entire quantity of the mincha, took the kemitza, there is a possibility of the mincha not being ruined simply by the posel putting the handful, the kemitza, back into the original kli. The Gemara at the top of Daf Zayin Amud Aleph, with which we begin our shiur today, the Gemara asks, "V'chimahader lei lakemetz leduchtei." When the posel or the zar, the non-kohen who is not qualified for this avoda, when he puts it back into the original vessel, granted he doesn't place it in a second kli shoreis, which we said, which Rav Nachman pointed out, would be the point of no return. But he places it back in an original service vessel. Why is it that when he puts it back in the original service vessel, tikdush v'lifsal, that should in effect cause the sanctification of the kometz as a kometz, and thereby ruin the mincha? The question, in other words, is what difference does it make which kli shoreis the handful is placed into, whether it be into the second official kli shoreis for the kometz, or it's returned to the original? And yet it was said on the bottom of Vav Amud Aleph that if it hasn't been placed in a second service vessel but placed back in the original, then the mincha is not ruined. That's a tikkun for it. That's a repair for it. So the question then, in simple words, is how is it that this is an option of putting it back into the original service vessel? To answer this, we will see several approaches and, let's say, remarks concerning this issue. On the outside margin, you'll notice we have a Nosei Mivneh heading. The diamond appears, and you can see in the Gemara itself we have three diamonds, and to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, you'll notice little numbers in diamonds, 1, 2, and 3. So in our outside margin, we explain Gimel Tegubos. Tegubos means reactions. L'she'ela be'inyan hachzoras hakoimetz. Likli shoreis harishon. Reading that again with the parenthesis, the point is we're talking about hachzoras hakometz, the return of the kometz shenikmatz al yedei posel kagon zar, that was taken by an unqualified individual like a non kohen, a zar, and then it's returned likli shoreis harishon. V'hogam achshav yesh kiddush al yedei posel. Right now, by the unqualified individual placing it back in the original service vessel, there is also a sanctification of the handful done by a non-qualified individual. That, too, should ruin it. So, Omar Rabbi Yochanan answers this by saying, Zois Eimeris, from this we see, from the fact that there is an option of placing the kometz back into the original vessel, Kli shoreis ein mekatshin elo midas. Service vessels do not, in fact, sanctify unless the person putting the item in the service vessel, in the Kli Sharis, has an intention for the service vessel to work as a sanctifier. If he doesn't have intention for it to sanctify, so it doesn't get sanctified, and therefore the kumitz that's put back into the original mincha is not considered sanctified by the unqualified individual. At this point in the Gemara, we have a bracketed section, and to appreciate what the role of this bracketed section is, we look at the comment, at the starred comment that you'll notice on the inside margin of the Gemara. Before we look at that, just note also we have a length marker for how long the bracketed section lasts. That's the vertical dash dotted line that you see in this case to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. At the end of this line, you'll notice the bracket closes in the middle of the Gemara text. So the note to explain these brackets, you can see Matras HaSograim, the purpose of these brackets, Laharois, to show the Ad Kan Tshuvas Rabbi Yochanan. Up till this point, Rabbi Yochanan's answer is his answer. Besocham, inside the brackets, HaGemara Ma'ale Kushya Al Diyuk Midvorov. The Gemara will raise a question by virtue of an inference from an inference that can be drawn from that which Rabbi Yochanan said. So that issue comes up in the brackets, a question on an inference from his answer, and the Gemara will respond. After that, you'll notice Rav Amram enters the pictures by saying that even if you say that a Kli Sharis is Mekadesh without intention, that namely Shalomidas Mekadshin, nevertheless, the return of the handful on the part of the posel doesn't necessarily render the Mincha posel when the handful is placed back into the original vessel, and we will see why. So we'll wait for that when we get to Rav Amram. Let's go back now to the bracketed section. Rabbi Yochanan just said that Kli Shores are Mekadshin if there is intent. The posel, when he puts it back into the original service vessel, when he puts the handful back in the original service vessel, he does not have intent for it to become sanctified. Therefore, the mincha remains kosher. The Gemara now asks, and the question lasts a few lines. You can see the long question marking to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. The Gemara asks, Ho midas mekachin? And if the posel has intent, that's the midas, he has intent, then the posel is mekadesh, he can affect sanctification. V'haba minei Reish Lakish Rabbi Yochanan. Reish Lakish asked of Rabbi Yochanan, who is in fact the topic of the main name in our discussion right now. Reish Lakish asked of Rabbi Yochanan, Kli Shores, Ma'u Shikachu Psulin L'chadchilo Likrav. Kli Shores, for example, a posel, an unfit individual, takes a handful, and places it into the handful of the meal offering, and places it into a second vessel for the purpose of it being offered, burnt on the altar. Does his placing in the Kli Sharis make it sanctified for offering? The Omar Lay and Rabbi Yochanan answered, Ein Mekadshin. He says that the puzzle cannot be Mekadesh. And here we have a case where he has das, and we're saying ein mekachin. So why did Rabbi Yochanan say before this that, well, if he does not have das, then it remains unaffected, leaving us with the feeling that if he does have das, it does become affected. But here we see that the posel's das, the posel's intent, does not lead the kometz to being offered on the mizbeach. The Gemara answers, there is a gray area between Amale Ein Mekachin Likrav. The apostle cannot have intention that will be effective in enabling the kometz to be offered on the Mizbeach. Avol Mekachin Lifsal. If he has intent for sanctification, the handful will become sanctified to the extent that it's rendered unfit. It's considered reaching a certain level of holiness, but at that very point, since a apostle was doing it and he had intention for its sanctifications, it becomes ruined. However, if he had no intention for sanctification, this is what is relevant to our sugya. That's where Rabbi Yochanan and the diamond appeared. He has no intention, then the kli shoreis has no sanctification effect on that handful whatsoever. Rav Amram Omar, Rashi points out, as we mentioned before, that Rav Amram is going a step further. He's saying, even if you say that the Kli Shoreis are Mekadesh Shelo Midas, that even without intention for sanctification, by the mere virtue of the fact that the handful was placed in a service vessel, it creates sanctification. The question then is, well, when the apostle puts it back into the first service vessel, how come the claim is made that the mincha is able to be done later on properly? Does he not ruin it? So the Gemara answers, and this appears in a couple stages. So that's why we have a little aleph here, and the next line a little beis. So the first stage of the answer is, he says, "Kegoin shechziro lebisa gedusha." The bisa is the name of the vessel, the kli shoreis that they used to mix the mincha with its oil. Gedusha means it's piled high. So the czar or the posel is taking is holding the kemetz and putting it back into the original vessel where the contents, the shirayim are piled high, so that in effect he's not putting it into the airspace within the walls of the kli shoreis. And anything that's not placed in the airspace or within the walls of the kli shoreis, here it's piled on high, it does not get sanctification. The Gemara asks, that may be very nice, but umekamitz hechi komatz? How can you take a kemitza from such an arrangement where the meal offering is piled high above the edge of the vessel? When you are taking the kemitza, you're in effect taking a handful of meal offering that's not in a service vessel, and the kemitz must come from within a service vessel. Here it's piled up above the edge. Ella, so we have to reevaluate our answer and say, kegoin shechziro lebisa tfufa. The return of the handful, he's placed back into a service vessel. That's the original, let's say, kli vessel that held the mincha, is simply piled. It's not piled above the rim, it's piled up till the rim. So the handful is placed at this point, but this is going to be changed a little bit later in the Gemara, but at this point we're supposed to understand that it's placed on the surface of the meal offering, the shirayim that's in the vessel, and the reason that the kometz itself does not become sanctified is because when he's placing it, the kometz itself, it remains above the rim. The Gemara asks, technically speaking, though, this is hard to understand. The kevan de kometz lay, when he originally took the kometz, when the posel took the kometz from this surface vessel that we said was piled till it was filled till the rim, we call it brimful. When the kometz was taken, ovad le guma, that made a depression. Guma is a hole or a depression in the meal offering. Therefore, ki mahader, when the posel puts the handful of meal offering back into this service vessel, le gave demona ka mahader le. He in effect is placing it into the depression, and the depression is already below the edge of the, below the rim level or the brim of the vessel. So, in effect, he is sanctifying it, even if he has no das, as far as Rav Amram is concerned. The Gemara answers, Mechi Mahader Lay, when he returns it, Monach Lay Adafno Demona, he places the handful on the edge of the vessel. And apparently on the edge of the vessel there is still a little meal offering there as well, so that it's the depression that we spoke about doesn't go to the very edge of the vessel. So he places the returned handful at the edge. Umonid lay, and then he shakes the vessel. The nofal memela, and the comets rolls back through gravity into the service vessel, so that the placing of the comets back, or the comets is return to the vessel, even to within the airspace of the vessel, is done basically through gravity, not his own placing it in directly in, because he places it at the edge of the vessel. The return of the comets into the airspace of the vessel itself is as if it were done by a monkey. In other words, a non-entity. Non-entity meaning in contrast to the person, the pusil, who, if he were to place it into the airspace, that would ruin it. But the fact that gravity is causing it to enter back into the airspace, enter the comets to enter back into the airspace, it's no worse than if a monkey had done it. And therefore, the comets or the mincha is not ruined. It's not ruined by the return of the comets. Omale Rabbi Yirmiyah Rabbi Zera. We see another diamond over here, because this is, though it's not a direct answer, it's a suggested answer. The Lukma, why not set up the return of the comets on the part of the Tsar or of the Apostle, Kigon Shechziru Kli Hamunoch Al Gabi Karka, that he placed it back into the original service vessel that is sitting on the ground. And the thought being that if it's sitting on the ground, so maybe it doesn't have sanctification powers. But it doesn't say that. You know, that was not suggested. So, Shamis Mino, this raises a question. Should we conclude from the fact that this suggestion was not given, that it was put in, that the puzzle put it back into a vessel sitting on the ground, that the fact that the vessel is sitting on the ground does not diminish the service possibilities in connection with a mincha? For example, should we conclude koinsin mikli sha'agabi karka, that one can remove the comets from the initial comets can be taken from a vessel filled with a meal offering with a mincha, while the vessel is not held by the kohen, while sitting on the ground. So, should we conclude that? This was a question Rav Yirmiya posed to Rabbi Zera. Rabbi Zera responds and says, "Ka nagis, you are touching upon b'ba'aya, a question d'ba'aya lon, that was a question amongst myself and my friends, my colleagues." The colleagues referred to in this particular discussion, we will see shortly, involves Rav Chista, who asked this question. Let's correct this. Not accurate to say this again. This is a question that's raised, we'll see later in the Gemara, by Rav Nachman, who was a friend, a colleague of Rabbi Zera. That's what the Gemara means when it says Konagas, you're touching upon the Bayalon. In the Gemara, we're going to see very shortly a bracketed section that we will skip initially. The Gemara continues and says, "De Abaye Toni Menachos Bei Rav Chista." Avimi was learning Maseches Menachos in the yeshiva of Rav Chista. Skipping the brackets, Poga Bei Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman met up with Avimi. At this point, Avimi is supposedly learned in Maseches Menachos. So Omale, Rav Nachman asks Avimi, Ketzad koinsin, how is kemitza done? Omar le, Avimi answers, mikli ze, from this vessel. So Avimi, in answering him, he's actually pointing to a vessel sitting on the ground. Omar le, Rav Nachman asks back, v'chi koinsin mikli sha'al gabi karka, is kemitza to be taken from a vessel sitting on the ground? Now notice, this is exactly the
topic or the suggestion raised in the diamond number 3 above. And the question was posed above by Rabbi Yirmiyah to Rabbi Zerah, and Rabbi Zerah tells him, hey, you know, this issue of the kli on the ground is an issue that our friend raised, Rav Nachman raised, in his asking of Avimi this very question. Is it so that one can be koimetz from a kli that's on the ground? So Avimi answers, Omar le, demagba le kohen. The kohen raises it. In other words, according to Avimi, you do not remove the koimetz from a kli while it's on the ground. Notice we have a bow tie marking. This is bow tie number 1. You will see on Omid Beis a number 2. Does everyone see that? The upper part of Omid Beis, the Gemara there says, Elo Shmamino, and the Gemara at that point is really brought to you by Rav Sheshes. So we can say that this is a reference to Rav Sheshes' sheet. He says, Elo Shmamino, Kainsin Mikli She'al Gabi Karka Shmamino. He concludes that kmitza can be removed from a vessel that's sitting on the ground. In other words, there's no need for a kohen to be holding the kli while the kmitza is being taken. So, as you get an overall picture of this Gemara, concerning this issue of kmitza mikli, she'al gabi karka, we've also employed in our markings a dashed underline to highlight this issue of kmitza mikli, so that you can see wherever it appears that that's the issue of koinsin, the taking use of a kli, she'al gabi karka. Before we go further, let's note that we skipped a section of more in brackets. We must go back to that. The Gemara had mentioned, and you should just know that which is in the brackets is very much a side point, hence the necessity of skipping it initially was beneficial. But right before the brackets, the Rabbi Zerah had told Rabbi Yirmiyah that the question that you, Rabbi Yirmiyah, are asking is a question that our friends dealt with also. And the reference there was to Rav Nachman, who met with Avimi. The Gemara, right before the brackets, pointed out that Avimi learned Menachas by Rav Chista. That would give you the impression that Avimi was the student of Rav Chista. In the brackets, though, this is brought into question. Here in the brackets it says, V'Avimi bei Rav Chista toni. Is that accurate to say that Avimi studied by in the yeshiva of Rav Chista? V'Omar Rav Chista. Rav Chista, though, reports the following. And before we read the Gemara, Rav Chista will tell us an incident involving himself as a student by Avimi, and that he had absorbed a lot of blows, so to speak, from Avimi in the course of his studying by him. So that we see from this piece of Gemara that we're about to learn that Rav Chista actually was a student of Avimi, bringing into question why was it presented right before that Avimi learned Menachos in the yeshiva of Rav Chista, giving the impression that Avimi studied under Rav Chista. So now we read the Gemara. The Avimi bei Rav Chista toni, is it accurate to say that Avimi studied by the yeshiva of Rav Chista? V'omar Rav Chista. Rav Chista tells us the following story. Kufi tovi boli me'avimi alo d'ho shmaitza. Kufi tovi, a lot of blows I absorbed from Avimi on the following sugya, the following piece of Torah learning. The topic here is not relevant whatsoever to our masechta of Menachos and Kmitza and related matters, but rather it's a sugya concerning the selling of property of orphans in order to pay off debts. So the in the course of the discussion, the following conclusion was mentioned. That's a matter of an announcement made to the public that certain properties of orphans are going to be sold, and the need for the announcement is a type of I wouldn't say necessarily an auction, but an announcement to the public in order to fetch the highest price. So if they intend to announce the imminent selling of Yesoma property, and the announcement will be done on consecutive days, so the announcing is to be done for a period of 30 consecutive days. If, however, it's decided, Sheni v'chamishi, that the announcements are not going to take place on consecutive days, but rather on Mondays and Thursdays, then the announcement informing the public of the sale of the orphan properties shall take place over a span of 60 days. How many Mondays and Thursdays are there in a span of 60 days? So, in fact, there are 18 Mondays and Thursdays. It's what happens, what you see is there are actually fewer actual days of announcement, but the same thing will be accomplished because it's done over a longer span of time. For our purposes, though, it's details of that sugya are not important for now. All one is supposed to see is that concerning the sugya of sales of orphan properties, Rav Chisda tells us that he absorbed a lot of blows from Avimi. So it's quite clear that Rav Chisda was a student of Avimi, not like was presented just before the brackets, that Avimi studied under Rav Chisda. The Gemara answers, the truth is that Avimi really was the teacher and Rav Chisda was the student, just like Rav Chisda reported in the story. However, the idea of Avimi learning Menachos by Rav Chisda, there's an explanation for that. Avimi, Masechta Isakra Isaker Lei. Avimi forgot Menachos. Masechta, in this case, is Menachos. He forgot the contents of Menachos, and he came V'osa Kamei Rav Chisda V'adkuri Gamrei. And Avimi went to his student, Rav Chisda, for assistance, for Rav Chisda to remind him of what is contained in Menachos, to teach him Menachos again, to refresh his memory. The Gemara asks, but after all, if Avimi is in fact the teacher, wouldn't it have been within the proper etiquette for Lishlach Lei V'Leisi L'Gabei, that Avimi should have sent for Rav Chisda, and Rav Chisda would have come to Avimi? The student coming to the teacher is much more acceptable than the teacher going to the student. The Gemara answers, Savar, Avimi calculated, he figured, Hachi Mistaya Milsutfei. My troubling myself to go to Rav Chisda will result in greater heavenly assistance, greater Siyata Dishmaya. The Gemara in Megillah on Daf Vav Amid Beis mentions that if one invests efforts in his Torah study, that's called Yegia. If he extends himself, puts himself out for Torah learning, Yogati Umatsasi, he will eventually be successful. So Avimi was figuring that by troubling himself to go to Rav Chisda, that extra investment of effort will result in his greater success in Torah learning. The Gemara continues, Poga be Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman met Avimi. At this point, we now know that Avimi familiarized himself with Menachos. Omar Lei, Rav Nachman asks, Ketzad Konsin, how is Kamitza done? Omar Lei, Avimi answers, Mikliza, from this vessel, and as we mentioned earlier, he's pointing to a vessel sitting on the ground. Omar Lei, so Rav Nachman raised a question, V'chi Konsin Mikli Sha'al Gabi Karka, does one take Kamitza from a Kli sitting on the ground? Amalei, Avimi said, no, the magbalei kohen. The kohen will pick it up when the kmitza is to be done. What was meant before when Avimi said that kmitza is done from this kli wasn't referring to the fact that the kli was sitting on the ground. He was simply saying that if this vessel was a kli shoreis, it would have been suitable for kmitza. You notice we have this double underline. It's simply here to emphasize the beginning of questions concerning the process of the mincha. So we have a second question. Ketzad mikachin es hakometz? How is kiddush kometz to take place? Kiddush Kometz is the sanctification of the handful of meal offering after the Kohen is already holding the handful. Omar Lei, so Avimi answered, Noisna Likli Zeh. It's placed in this vessel. And once again, he's pointing to a vessel sitting on the ground. So to this, Rav Nachman asks, V'chi mekachin b'kli shal gabi karka? Does one sanctify in a vessel while it's sitting on the ground? Amalei, so Avimi answers, no. The magbalei koyein. The koyein picks it up. So while it's being held in the hands of the koyein, the kometz is placed into that vessel. What have we described up to this point? According to Avimi's approach, the original vessel holding the meal offering shall not be on the ground while the kemitzah is being taken. The vessel to receive the kemitzah shall also not be on the ground. That also must be held. So you have already two kohanim functioning in this matter, and you have the kohen who's actually taking the kometz from the original vessel and then placing it in the second vessel. So the Gemara points out, Omar Lei, so Rav Nachman says back, if you're telling me that it's supposed to be picked off the ground, Im kein hutzrachto gimel kohanim. Well, then you're requiring three kohanim to be involved in the kemitzah. Omar Lei. So Avimi says, who cares about the numbers? Utei tzricha yud gimel ketamid. Let it require 13 kohanim, like are required in the processing of the tamid, the daily public sacrifice, the tomid shel shachar, tomid shel bein abayim. Well, it's for the tomid you require 13 kohanim. So what if the mincha requires 3? What's the problem with that? However, there is a problem. Eisve, the following source is raised as the problem. The source begins. It says ze haklal kol hakoymets v'noisim bekli hamoylich v'amaktir lechol davar shedako lechol v'chulei. The source here is a somewhat abbreviated quote. It's referring to the process of the mincha, of the kmitza being done with a certain kind of mindset, and it emphasizes the different stages of the mincha process. And that's what's relevant to our discussion, not the issue so much of the mindset. That's dealt with in other sukkahs. But how many people are featured, or how many... Who is featured in the kometz taking process? So we note here, you have the kohen that takes the handful. It may be the same kohen who's putting it in a kli, no same kli. Hamolich, one who walks with it. Once again, it could be the same kohen, but there's a walking process to the altar. The hamaktir, and the one who puts it on the fire, provided he's maktir lechol dover shidako lechol, something that's he does it with the mindset of eating the shirayim, let's say, at the wrong time. But once again, for our purposes, we're not here to focus on the mindset. We're focusing on the processes, the procedures that characterize the kometz offering from beginning to end. We started with the taking of the handful to the placing on the fire. Did you see anything here about the picking up of the vessel? No. The ilu magbia lo godani. It doesn't mention anything here about the picking up of the kli shoreis with the mincha in it, or the holding of the kli shoreis for receiving the kometz, for that matter, either. No mention of magbia. The answer, the response to that is, in fact, there still, the Avimi will tell you there still is a necessity for having it raised. Tana seder avoidus nokit velo seder kohanim. The Tana is interested simply in telling you the procedures for offering the kometz, the procedures that take place to the kometz itself. The source here is not interested in recording the number of kohanim that are necessary to accomplish this. Therefore, it could very well be that there's someone that's picking up the vessels at the time that the kemitzah is being taken. However, since the picking of the vessel is not an additional process with respect to the offering of the kemitzah, it's therefore not recorded here. Bomine midi Rav Sheshes. The question was asked of Rav Sheshes, Ma likmoitz mikli shal gabi karka?
The same question that we saw dealt with just before. Omar Le, Rav Sheshes says, Pok Chazi, my Avdin Lego. My Avdin Legav. Go take a look at what takes place in the Heichal. Before we go further in the Gemara, we want to point out that in the Heichal, in addition to the menorah and the Mizbeach Hazav, there was also the Shulchan, the table that contained the Lechem upon him, sometimes translated as the shoebreads. The Lechem upon him was placed, were two stacks each of six loaves, and two containers known of as bazichen that contained a spice called lavoina. So you have two bazichen and two stacks of breads. Every Shabbos, the breads that were sitting on the table over the week were taken out, and two new stacks of breads were brought in addition to two bozichin of Lavona. We would like to point out that the removal of the bozichin, the taking off of the bozichin, taking off of the bozichin from the table, is tantamount to the removal of a handful from a meal offering. In other words, the lechem aponim is a type of mincha. Of course, you have complete loaves. Those loaves are distributed to the kohanim. Those we can call the shirayim. However, in order to matir the loaves, in order to allow them to be distributed to the kohanim, the bozichin are removed from the table and put and burnt on the mizbeach. So, now that we've established a parallel between the bozichin and the kmitza of a regular meal offering, we can continue in the Gemara. So Rav Sheshes, in responding to the question of kmitza being taken from a kli on the ground, he is going to answer from what took place with regard to the removal of the bozichen, which is the same thing as taking a kmitza, the removal of bozichen from the shulchan. The Gemara will very shortly demonstrate that the will attempt to demonstrate and show us that the shulchan remained on the ground. In other words, there was no raising of the shulchan. If that be the case, so too when you take a kmitza from a kli, the kmitza can be taken from a kli sitting on the ground, just like the shulchan. The source says, by the lechem aponim, arbo kohanim nichnasim, four kohanim enter on Shabbos. Shnayim biodom shnei sidarim, two kohanim, each one holding one stack of breads. Ushnayim biodom shnei bozichen, and two other kohanim enter, each one holding a bozach. A bozach is the name of the vessel containing the levona. The arba'a makdimin lifnehem, four kohanim enter before these kohanim that we just mentioned. What is the purpose of the four that enter beforehand? They enter empty-handed. Shnayim litoil shnei sidarim, two of them go in without anything in their hands because they are going to remove the two stacks of the lechem upon him. Ushnayim litoil shnei bozichin, and the two other kohanim are going to take the bozichin from the shulchan. The ilu magbia es a shulchan lo kafani. There's no reference to a kohen that goes in to pick the table off the ground, to be raised off the ground at the moment that the bozichin are taken off. As we mentioned, the removal of bozichin is the equivalent of the taking of the handful of a standard mincha, and we don't see the table being raised off the ground. So, magbias ha-shulchan lo katani. That would show, and this is what Rav Sheshes wants to answer, that you are able to kaimitz mikli shagabi karka. The Gemara asks, Lav Amris Hasam, did we not say with regard to the earlier Tanaic source that was cited in this sugya, Seder Avodas Nokat, the rebuffal of the original, in the original sugya, the sugya just before this, the answer that Avimi had mentioned was that the Gemara was simply reporting the necessary stages
Seder Avodos Nochah, but not dealing with number of Kohanim. Hochanami, you can say the same thing here with regard to the process of the Lechem upon him. Seder Avodos Nochah. The Brisa, this Tanaic source that was presenting the issue of the Lechem upon him, was just interested in showing us the necessary steps in the Lechem Haponim process. But, in truth, there are more Kohanim that participate in this. Namely, there's one to pick up the table. The Gemara responds and says, you can't compare the way we rebuffed the previous discussion, and we do have a little arrow, by the way, to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text indicating Omed Aleph. That's where you saw the rebuffal of Seder Avodas Nochah. Here, though, the Gemara says, you can't push off the proof from the Lechem Aponim with the same answer. Me, dummy, how can you compare the two sukyas? Hosam lo nochis leminyona de kehanim. In the first discussion, the Gemara was not dealing with numbers of kohanim. In other words, the source was dealing with the procedures necessary toward the offering of the kohanim. But it wasn't dealing with numbers of kohanim. Ha-ha, here in the source dealing with the Lechem upon him, though, Nochis Leminyona de Kehanim. He descends into numbers. In other words, he involves himself with numbers of Kehanim. It mentioned four go in and carrying things in, and four go ahead of time. So you see an emphasis, a focus on numbers. And therefore, in Esau, if it's so that there is a Kohen for picking up the table, listening, Magvia, you should have taught that there's another Kohen, a ninth Kohen, if you will, for picking up the Shulchan. Eloshma mino, from the fact that there's no mention of a Magvia, Kainsin mikli, she'al gabi karka, shma mino, that you can remove a Kometz from a Kli while it's sitting on the ground, just like the removal of the Bozichin from the Shulchan while it is sitting on the ground. As we go on in the Gemara, we have a new marking. We've circled Rava because we want to focus on him as the speaker. There's a trapezoid, which is one of our geometric forms indicating a series of something or whatever. Here, we've used it to highlight two expressions, pshita and boi. You'll notice them in the Gemara. Pshita is an indication of something that Rava finds obvious and not necessary to discuss it. Boi indicates something that's a matter that's not clear, is a question that he wants to investigate. We will see in the Gemara little numbers 1, 2, and 3. This is to indicate that Rava is certain on 2 points and has a question on a 3rd point. In addition, we have a double underline, which in this case we can revert to our topic heading on the outside margin with the structural note, where you see a little trapezoid shape featured. And we've indicated pshita / boi. Those are the words that you'll see in the trapezoid. Hityachasut shel Rava, Rava's attention to lishlavim shonim, to different stages b'mincha, with regard to the offering of a mincha, behekshir lekli shal gabi karka. The discussion here is in the context of a vessel sitting on the ground. So we have an idea of what we will see. Let's go right into the text. Omar Rava, pshito li, kaimetz mikli sh'al gabi karka shekeim osinu b'siluk bozichin. It's obvious to me, it's simple to me, that kmitza can be removed from a vessel while it's sitting on the ground, just like we saw with regard to the removal of the bozichin, the containers of Lavona, in the case of the Shulchan, which we established a moment ago, is sitting on the ground. Number 2, Mekachin Mincha B'Kli Sha'agabi Karka. One can sanctify the original Mincha. Here we're not talking about the Kohanim, we're talking about the original Mincha from which a Kohanim is taken, so that the sanctification of the original Mincha can take place also B'Kli Sha'agabi Karka. Shekein motzinu basidur bazichin. In this case, the word bazichin appears, but one should take into consideration the breads as well. Namely, how were they set up? Remember, we mentioned that the lechem aponim is a form of mincha. So the stacks of bread, the two stacks of bread, and the containers of the lavona, the bazichin, that constitutes a single unit or a unit of mincha. How are the breads set up, or when are they set up? They're set up while the table is sitting on the ground. The stack of breads and the bazichin, the receptacles holding the lavona, are placed on the table surface while the table is sitting on the ground. No one's picking it up. Therefore, the sanctification of a standard mincha in its original sanctification can take place in the same way in a vessel that's sitting on the ground. Boy, Rava, Kiddush Koimetz Mai. What about the sanctification of the handful in a second service vessel? Rashi points out that with regard to the Kiddush Koimetz, sanctification of handful, we can't draw from the Lechem Aponim, because we don't find any subsequent sanctification of the bozichin once they are removed from the table. The bozichin are vessels containing Levona, and as far as we know, the bozichin were carried by the Kohen, the two Kohanim, directly to the Mizbech, and the contents, the Levona, placed into the fire. So that there's no second sanctification of the Levona, which we said represented the Koimetz. So we can't draw information regarding Kiddush Koimetz, sanctification of handful, from the case of the Lechem Aponim. Therefore, we're going to look into other possibilities. So Rav is asking, the Kiddush Koimetz Mai, what is to be said about sanctification of the handful? And here there are two possibilities, and we've labeled them as Aleph, O, Beis, at the end of the line. First possibility, mimincha yalfinon la. Maybe we should simply learn from mincha, just like we saw up till now the different steps in the mincha involve vessels on the ground. So two kiddush koimetz can take place in a vessel while it's sitting on the ground. Oy, or mi dam yalfinon la. Dam is a reference to kabbalas adam, the receipt of the blood of an animal that's slaughtered. When the animal's neck is cut, there is a Kohen holding a receptacle, and we must emphasize, a Kohen is holding the receptacle that receives the blood. If we look in the Shita Mekubetzes, Os Gimel, very close to the top, we've underlined it to make it easier to see, and what we've underlined there is ma dam ein mekablan esoy bekli shoresh sha'al gabi karka, just like the blood is not received in a vessel sitting on the ground. Dichti v'krivu b'nei Aaron es hadam zu kabola v'holocha lo tepuk michlal kabola, and holocha is not to be viewed any differently than kabola. Holocha is the carrying of the blood to the mizbeach. So just like the halacha takes place while it's being held, obviously he's walking with it to the mizbeach, so too kabbalah is treated the same way while the vessel is being held. So our question is how to look at kiddush koimetz to compare it to mincha, and therefore sanctification can take place while the receiving vessel is on the ground, or from dam, where the kli that receives the blood is held in the kohen, not sitting on the ground. The vessel is not on the ground. Hadar poshta. The question was raised by Rava. Rava then answers it. Midam yalfinon la. I want to learn from the way we treat the dam, the blood. Therefore, kiddush koimetz, not on the ground. Not into a vessel sitting on the ground. The Gemara asks a question that lasts a few lines. You can see we have a long question answer indicator to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. Omi Omar Rava Hachi. Does Rava really say thusly that we learn from the blood? V'ha itmar koimetz shecholkoi b'shnei kelim. Here's a halacha concerning handful of meal offering. Let's say the handful was divided into two separate vessels. Rav Nachman Omar Eino Kadosh. If the handful is divided into two separate vessels, the koimetz does not gain its necessary sanctification. The Rava Omar, notice we've dashed underline Rava because he is the focus of our discussion. The Rava Omar Kadosh. Kodosh means that the fact that the Kometz was split into two separate receiving vessels does not interfere with it becoming sanctified. Now, if it's so that we learn dinim of Kometz from Dam, Leilef Midam, and it must be spelled out that Dam that's received in two separate vessels does not become sanctified. So we see that Rava is not learning from Dam. The Gemara answers, Hodar Bei Rava Mehahi. Rava backs off. He changes his mind from that which he said, that the Kometz is Kadosh L'Chatzoyin. In fact, what we want to emphasize, therefore, is that Rava does learn from Dam. Therefore, as we said before, the kli that's going to receive the handful for sanctification must not be on the ground, just like the kli that receives the blood is held by the Kohen. And as far as that which he said, that the Kometz can be sanctified in two separate vessels, he doesn't say that anymore. He rejects that. He changes his mind, being that he learns from Dam, which is not sanctified if received in two separate vessels. Now that we mentioned Dam, the Gemara becomes interested and focuses on this issue. On the outside margin, we have a nosei, a topic heading, Minolon v'dam shekibloi l'chatzoyin einoi kodesh. From where do we know that Dam that was received in two parts, in halves, in other words, in two separate vessels, is not sanctified? The Gemara. And we ask the question, V'dam minolon d'lo kodesh l'chatzoyin, from where do you know that blood is not sanctified in halves? The Gemara answers. You'll notice that we have a long answer marking. We would like to point out ahead of time that there will be a certain point in this long answer marking that a brackets will begin. When we reach that bracketed point, it'll be worth noting, and maybe it's worth noting ahead of time, that the purpose of those brackets eventually is really for skipping purposes, in order to create a connection between the Gemara's question that will appear after the bracketed section. The bracketed section is very long. You'll notice it goes till three lines from the bottom. So we're going to have a certain point of clarity that we will gain if we skip those brackets initially. We will go over this point in a moment. In other words, when we get to the brackets, we'll deal with that again. In the meantime, the question here is, from where do we know that Dam is not sanctified l'chatzoyin, in halves? Ditoni Rav Tachlivo ben Shaul. Rav Tachlifo teaches the following source. This source is in the context of the Pora Aduma. The Pora Aduma was the red cow that was eventually slaughtered. Its blood was sprinkled from the Mount of Olives and toward the direction of the... It was sprinkled eastward toward the Heichal, toward the Beis HaMikdash, and the carcass of the Pora Aduma was burnt, and its ashes were used to add to water for the purpose of Tara from Tumas Meis, from ritual impurity absorbed through exposure to the dead. So the source regarding the Pora Aduma says, Kidesh pochus michtei hazo'o bekli zeh, upochus michtei hazo'o bekli zeh, lo kidesh. If one, kidesh, in the context of Pora Aduma, is a reference to the mixing or the adding of the ashes to the water that was drawn from a live spring, that water was mixed with the ashes of the Pora Aduma. There's a certain minimum amount when dealing with the Mei Pora Aduma. It's referred to here by the term Bechdei Hazah, enough for the sprinkling. This is a reference to the immersion of the tips of a certain plant. The azov plant was immersed in the water, so and then sprinkled on the client that needs the tara. So the roshe givoylin, as it's called, the tip of the azov must be able, or it must be sufficient water for it to be immersed. Let's say that a person mixed ashes with a very small amount of water, which is less than pachos michdei azah. He mixed the ashes in one vessel with less than the minimum required water, and he mixed the ashes in a second vessel also with the less than minimum required water in anticipation of, let's say, mixing them together later. But the initial sanctification or the mixing of the ash and the water was done when you had a, let's say, chatzoyin. I want to use that word because that's what we were using up till this point. We have half the required amount. So that's as far as the water and ash mixture in the case of the Parah Aduma. The question was raised, Bedam Mai. What is the halacha with regard to the receipt of blood? Bedam Mai, right? That's the question. And the Gemara raises this question and raises two possibilities. And you can see we have an aleph. Next line is a squiggle line in O, Dilma, or possibly Beis. In our markings, we use the squiggle line in addition to many other roles to emphasize where the Gemara presents two different options. In this case, it's represented by the expression O, Dilma. So the question of the Dam is as follows. Hilchisahi, may Hilchisalog Yalfinon. Is it so that the by the Parah Aduma, the necessary the requirements by the Parah Aduma are based on oral tradition from Mount Sinai. That's called Hilchasa, Halacha L'Moshe Mi-Sinai. And topics who are based on Halacha L'Moshe Mi-Sinai do not serve as a basis for other things. Therefore, there might be a stringency with regard to Parah Aduma, but I will not learn from that to other topics, and we're trying to learn right now to the issue of the blood. O Dilma, or possibly Hosam Mai Taima, by the Parah Aduma, the reason for its not being sanctified when it's Pachos Mikashiur is it's because the Chtiv, there's a pasuk says V'Toval Ba Mayim, that you immerse the Ezov in the water, V'Toval Ba Mayim. And the reference to the water means the water that has the required amount. Hachanami, well, in the case of the blood, you have a similar pasuk that says v'toval badam. And if you tell me v'toval b'mayim means that it's the plant is immersed in the water that had the proper amount from the outset, from the point that it was sanctified, the same thing in the case of the pasuk with the blood, which is in Vayikra Perek Dalet Pasuk Vav, and we've written this pasuk on the inside margin of the Gemara and pointed out that this is in the case of the chatos of the sprinkling of the blood of the chatos par koin moshiach, so the chatos offering brought as a cow in the event that a koin moshiach sinned in an erroneous legal ruling, and the sprinklings are done on the paroches. That involves the kohen immersing his finger in the kli holding the blood and then sprinkling it seven times toward the paroches in the heichal. So just like by the Parah Aduma, you have a pasuk indicating that there must be a shiur of water at the point of its sanctification, so too we have a similar pasuk with regard to the blood. V'itmar, Omar Rabbi Zrika, Omar Rabbi Lozer. After the question was raised, we maybe ought to go over that point again. There was an Aleph O Dilma Beis, the issue of the Dam, do I learn it from the Parah Aduma or not? And now we see a response to that particular question. V'itmar, Omar Rabbi Zrika, Omar Rabbi Lozer, Af Bedam Loi Kidesh. In fact, by the Dam, like the Parah Aduma, there is no sanctification if it's done lechatzoyin, done in parts. If we take advantage of these wonderful curlicue brackets, skip momentarily to three lines from the bottom. The Gemara there says, at the end of the line, Umi Omar Rabbi Elazar Hochi, does he really say thusly? And the thusly is essentially what we just saw before the brackets. Notice we had circled Rabbi Elazar's name to make for easy reference, and we've also included an arrow to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, which instructs you to scan up to find the earlier arrow, and it's pointing to that line where Rabbi Elazar's name appears. And what did he say there? He said that by the dam also there's no sanctification if it's in parts. So at this point, three lines from the bottom of the Gemara asks right on that, Umi Omar Elazar Hochi, does he say that af bedam lo kidish l'chatzoyin? Voi itmar, chavite kohen gadol, Rabbi Yochanan Omar eino kedosh l'chatzoyin, Rabbi Elazar Omar, mitoch shekarva l'chatzoyin, kedosh l'chatzoyin. For our purposes, because we'll obviously have to go over this particular sugya again, but for our purposes, what we want to see just at this point is that we have Rabbi Elazar's name dashed underlined on the bottom, and he speaks about something that is sanctified l'chatzoyin. There is sanctification in parts. That will be the basis of the question that appears after the brackets. So the role of these brackets is simply, as we said, Rabbi Elazar gave an answer to the issue of the sanctification of the blood, l'chatzoyin, and he said it's not kodesh l'chatzoyin. At the bottom, the Gemara will ask, does Rabbi Elazar really hold that way, that there's no kedusha l'chatzoyin, when in fact we see, albeit in a different topic, but the topic concerning chavite kohen gadol, the daily kohen gadol meal offering called chavite kohen gadol, that there is sanctification l'chatzoyin. Now that we've set the stage for that, we can now go back to the brackets where we left off and start the Gemara right within the brackets. The truth is that even though we indicated that the brackets are for skipping, on the other hand, you'll notice that we had started a long answer marking a few lines up, the tuf that's encircled, and this long answer marking, pay attention now, it goes right through the beginning of the bracketed section. So you might ask, how can this be? How can you have a long answer continuing through a section that we just suggested to skip? So with the miracle of markings, we're trying to dance at two weddings. We're trying to show you that on the one hand, after Rabbi Elazar makes his point that af bedam lo kidesh, you will see the Gemara asks on that point, but where does the question appear? It appears way at the bottom. So we use the brackets in order to facilitate your ability to see the relationship of the Gemara at the end of the page to where the question that is at the end of the page, where it really is relevant. On the other hand, the section that continues right now, beginning with Omar Rava at the beginning of the brackets, is really a completion of the answer that we were trying to provide with regard to Kiddush Dam L'Chatzoyin. So hopefully we haven't created confusion, but rather contributed to clarity. So Rabbi Elazar just said, Rabbi Elazar is an Amora, and he just said that the Dam, just like by the Paraduma, no sanctification in parts, so too with regard to the receipt of the blood of a Korban in two separate vessels, there is no sanctification. Omar Rava, Tanyona Amihochi, Rava says, I will bring Tanaic support to this approach. The Toval, the Pasuk that's referred to here is the same Pasuk we just referred to a moment ago, Vayukha Perek Dalet Pasuk Vav. Let's look at the Pasuk before we go on in the Gemara, because this Brisa will be breaking it in parts. The Pasuk says, and we've included this on the inside margin, the Toval HaKoyin Esetzbo Badam V'hizah Min Hadam Sheva Palmim Lifnei Hashem Espenei Paroches HaKodesh. The Pasuk tells us that the Kohen immerses his finger in the blood and then sprinkles the blood seven times toward the Paroches that's in the Heichal. So the Brisa says, the Toval immerse velo maspig, and don't wipe blood off the sides of the vessel containing the blood. We want the Kohen to put his finger into a pool of blood, so to speak, the pool being the blood that's contained in the vessel, and not wiping blood off the inside wall of the vessel. The Pasuk says, Badam, And this we've dashed underline because this is really what the point of support that the Brisa offers to Rabbi Elazar. And it says, from the word Badam, I learn, Shehei Badam, Shiur Tvilo Meikaro, that there must be the requisite quantity of blood in the vessel from the outset. And that's what we meant before, that there is no sanctification in parts. The Pasuk says, Min Hadam. And there's an obscure phrase that the Gemara will deal with later. Min Hadam Shebe'inyan. As we said, the Gemara will deal with this in a separate discussion. In fact, in our markings, if you want to, you can just skip ahead and see it ahead of time. Of course, some people don't like to remain in suspense when full of anticipation of what are we going to see. So you will see a few lines later in angular brackets, and that is indicated on the left, to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, there's a vertical dotted line. That is there to show the length of this other bracketed section. This, in fact, is really an internal bracket because, as we pointed out before, we had the curlicue brackets for the purpose of making things clear with regard to Rebbe Lozer's ruling and the eventual question on his ruling. But we'll get back to that later. Before we deal with the end of this source, the Gemara deals with the two words, Vitoval and Badam. It's necessary for the Torah to use to tell us that, and we learned v'toval means and not wipe it off the sides. And it's also important for the pasuk to refer to the necessity of having the requisite amount of blood at the initial receipt point. The E Kosav Rahman of v'toval, had the Torah used just the word v'toval and not told me the Badam, Havamino, I would have thought, Afagav, the Lokibel Shiur Tvilos Meikora, that things would be okay even if he didn't receive the required quantity of blood for all of the finger immersions at the outset. In other words, it would have been okay for, let's say, if there are seven hazos, it would have been okay to receive in one vessel the quantity for three sprinklings, and a second vessel the quantity for four sprinklings. That's what I would have thought had the Torah simply used the word v'toval and not the and not badam. Therefore, kosav rachmona badam, to inform us that you need to have the required amount for all of the hazos in the kli initially. The E, kosav rachmona badam, had the Torah just written badam, which was the clue or the indicator of amount, hava mina filu mesapig, or maspig, I would have thought that wiping off the sides would have also been a legitimate way of getting the blood onto the finger. Kosav rachmona v'toval. Therefore, the Torah uses the word v'toval, indicating that it's not legitimate to get the blood on the finger through wiping off the inside wall of the vessel. At this point, we encounter what we mentioned before, the angular brackets, and we have a note in the inside margin describing their role. Sograyim elu, these angular brackets, mi'udim l'tachem, they are designed to establish the boundaries of isuk ha-gemorah, the involvement of the gemorah, b'ho de'katoni b'braisa d'liyah min adam sheb'inyin. If you want to know how long the gemorah will discuss that particular phrase, min hadam sheb'inyin, that you can see by noting the quantity of gemorah that's within these angular brackets. Dosei shel shirayim, Sheldam Sheba'etzpa. The topic of that we'll encounter here is the issue of blood left on the finger after the sprinkling takes place. In other words, the Kohen immerses his finger in the blood, does a sprinkling, and then there's residual blood on the finger. Let us look at our topic heading in the outside margin, and we've indicated Nosei Besoich Hasagrayim, the topic that's in this bracketed section. It is Maha Geder, what's the classification? Shel Dam Hanishar Al Ha'etzpa Achrei Kol Hazor. After each sprinkling, if we talk about seven sprinklings, so the Kohen immerses his finger in the blood, does a sprinkling. Let's say there's blood that remains on the finger. Of course there's blood. Let's say there's enough blood on the finger that he could just do another flick of the finger, so to speak. Would that be acceptable? So that will be something to look into. And furthermore, even if you say that would not be acceptable, let's say after doing a hazah, he immerses his finger again, but when he immerses his finger, he's immersing it with the residual blood that's left on his finger from the prior sprinkling. In other words, let us say he doesn't wipe his finger off in the interim. Is that okay? So the Gemara continues. Min hadam shebe'inyan, and if you just happen to be starting the Gemara at this point and you don't know where this comes from, so we have a little arrow to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. If you can scan up the page, you'll see a parallel arrow, and you'll see that this is a quote from the end of the Tanaic source above. But as we said, we can view this sugya as a self-contained unit. The Gemara goes on. Min hadam shebe'inyan lim utemai. What is the pasuk trying to, by when it says min hadam, what is being excluded? Omar Rava, Limute Shirayim She Be'etzpa, to the exclusion of the residual blood that remains on the residue blood that remains on the finger after a sprinkling. This is telling me that for every sprinkling, you have to immerse the finger again and again. And as we said in our introduction, one cannot do a sprinkling and then say, hey, I've got more blood on my finger, I might as well just do another sprinkling without a prior second immersion. So we're saying that would not be legitimate. Messiah Leila Reb Elazar. This supports Reb Elazar teaching. Diyamar Shirayim Shebe'etzba Psulin. The residual blood on the finger is unfit for sprinkling. Before we go further in the Gemara, some structural notes to take note of. First of all, we're about to start a long question. This is indicated by the encircled kuf to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara, with the dashed vertical line. The dashed dotted line is reserved for a bracket length indicator, but the kuf, you can see, is followed by a dashed vertical line. We also are encountering a triangle, and in order to appreciate the role of the triangle, let's look at our mivneh heading in the outside margin. The triangle is part of a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track. That will mean that the triangle's position will be changing as we go along. Point up, and then point facing down. So under the mivneh heading, you see the triangle, and we also have an indication, as we said, ma'akav. The point facing up represent kushyos, questions al rava, questions on Rava, Laros Deshiraim Shemetzok Sherim, in an attempt to show that the residue blood on the finger after any given sprinkling is suitable for a subsequent sprinkling. And then, as you scan ahead in the Gemara, you'll notice a different type of triangle, namely point facing downwards, appears. Those are Tshuva's responses. So Rava just got finished telling us his din, namely Shirayim Sheba Etzma, as being unfit. The Gemara now asks, Omar le Ravin bar Rava, bar Rav Ada le Rava, Ravin bar Rav Ada asks Rava. He says the following, Amri Talmidcha Omar Rav Amram Tanya. Your student quoted Rav Amram as citing a Tanaic source that says, Hoyamaze. Before we read the source, it would be of value to give some introduction. The source deals with the issue of blood of sacrifices that gets onto the beged, the Kohen's garment. There is a special halacha of kibbutz, a requirement of washing the garment in the Azorah of the Beis HaMikdash. The question is, under what circumstances does this special restrictive din of kibbutz set in? So we can tell you that it sets in when blood that's fit for sprinkling lands on the garment or soils the garment. Blood that is no longer fit for sprinkling, that's not, in other words, let's say blood that's left over after the sprinkling is finished, that does not mechayev kibus. The source, hoyo mazeh, you have a kohen doing the sprinklings of blood. The nitzah hazo miyado, and there splatters some of the blood. Hazo is literally the sprinkling, but sprinkling of the blood splatters on his garment. So now it depends. So we've noted this with an aleph and a beis. Ad shelo hizo, if the blood gets onto the garment before the sprinkling was done, then we're talking about blood that's fit for sprinkling. Well, Tohu Kibbutz, that necessitates Kibbutz, as we mentioned. That's the special washing of the garment in the Azara. Mishe Hizo Ein Tohu Kibbutz. However, blood that soils the garment after the sprinklings do not require Kibbutz. My love, what does this mean? So with some further elucidation, the Gemara says, Ad shelo gomar hazoso versus umisha gomar hazoso. The aleph and beis that we have here correspond to the aleph and beis in the source. Let's go over this again. Ad shelo gomar hazoso, until he finishes all of the sprinklings, the blood necessitates kibbutz if it soils the garment. Now, what is included when you talk about as long as he has not finished all of the sprinklings? Well, you've got residue blood on his finger that is there from the actual sprinklings themselves. So you have shirayim sheba etzba that can generate or necessitate the need for kibbutz. That shows us that is classified as dam, because only that which is classified as dam necessitates kibbutz. And if it necessitates kibbutz, it must have been something, it's therefore something that's suitable for the hazah. What does not necessitate kibbutz? That's umisha gomar hazoso. Any blood that soils the kohen's garment after he completes the sprinklings does not mechayev kibbutz. Shma mino, this would prove the shirayim sheba etzba ksherim, that the residual blood on the finger is kosher, is acceptable for the sprinkling. And how do we know this? Just like we saw, that residue blood generates the need for kibbutz. What we've tried to accomplish with some of our markings, you can see the dashed underline here. Compare this to the dashed underline that you saw just above. In other words, just at the beginning where the question began, the line where the question began, just before the question, Rabbi Lozer had stated that Shirayim Shebetzah Psulim. Here we see, thanks to the rules of Kibbutz, that Shirayim Shebetzah Ksherim. Mora says, lo. And this in effect will be a rejection of the question, and we will reestablish what we said, that Shirayim Shebetzah are really puzzle. So what are we going to do with regard to this source dealing with kibbutz? Well, we have to reinterpret it as follows. Ad shelo yotzisa miyodoi hazo ta'on kibbutz. The Kohen immerses his finger in the blood. If the blood that's on his finger, let us say, drips onto his garment before he did the act of sprinkling, so that necessitates kibbutz. However, once the blood leaves his finger to accomplish the sprinkling, any other blood, namely the residue blood on his finger, and there splatters on his garment from that which remains on his finger after he did the hazah, ein ta'un kibbutz. That will not generate a need for kibbutz, because shirayim sheba etzba themselves, the residue blood itself, is not kosher for sprinkling. Esvei Abaye. Abaye raises a question. This question is coming from a source dealing with the Pora Aduma. We gave some introductory words about Pora Aduma earlier, therefore no need at this point. But what we can say is that when the Por Aduma was slaughtered, there was a sprinkling of its blood toward the direction of the Beis HaMikdash. So the source says, Gomar milahazois mekaneach yodoi begufa shel Porah. That only when he finishes all of the sprinklings, then does he wipe his hand on the carcass of the cow, which eventually will be burnt. You see that there's a necessity of all parts of the cow that remain are to be burnt. So they have blood that's used for the sprinkling. The residue blood is the residue blood that remains on his hand after he finishes the sprinklings, that is wiped on the carcass of the animal, of the porah, and eventually burnt. But at what point is there a necessity to rid himself of the blood on his hand? Gomar in, only when he finishes the hazals does the blood become, let's say, part of the cow, meaning it must be burnt with the cow. Lo gomar lo. But if he hasn't finished the hazals, the blood that, let's say, is on his finger in the middle of his hazals, that's part of the hazals. That's blood that's fit for the sprinkling. That's the shirayim shebe'etzpas being kosher. Now that's not like what Rebbe Elazar said above. Omale, Rava, who is combined with Rebbe Elazar in this discussion, Rava had indicated that shirayim shebe'etzpas is puzzle, and Rava therefore has to answer this, and he says as follows. Gomar, when you finish all of the hazos by the Por Aduma, then mekaneach yodo, then you have to wipe off your hand. Lo gomar, however, if he hasn't finished all of the sprinklings, but he's in the middle of the sprinklings, mekaneach etzboi, he has to wipe off his finger. What are we saying? We're saying that after he immerses his finger in the blood and does a sprinkling, the residue blood has to be wiped off. It's not suitable for sprinkling. That's Shirayim Shebe'etzpas being puzzle. So at this point, Rava has defended his position. Shirayim Shebe'etzpas is puzzle. He's defended himself from the two attacks that were raised against him that we saw with the two triangles point facing up. We have a semicolon in the Gemara to create the following feeling. That is, Rava is fine. Rava has defended his position. However, the Gemara has some, let's say, a question on details right now regarding the wiping of the hand and the finger that we just spoke about. Bishlamo gomar mekaneach yodoi. I understand the practicality or the metzias of when completing all dazos, there is a wiping of the hand. How is that done? Begufa shel porah. He wipes his hand on the carcass of the porah aduma. Dichtiv, wiping means wipes it to get the blood off his hand. Dichtiv, v'sarof es haporah li'einov. And from that we learn that the blood must be part of the burning. Elo lo gomar mekaneach etzboi. But as far as what you said, that if he's in the midst of the hazos, he hasn't finished all of the hazals, he hasn't finished all of the sprinklings, there is nevertheless a necessity to wipe off the finger from the blood in between each hazal, b'may mekaneach. What is he going to use for wiping off the finger? And without getting into any technical discussion, let's just say because the Rashi here and the Rashi that appears in another Gemara actually gives a different explanation, so let us just say for practicality purposes, mekaneach etzbo is not going to be done begufa shel porah. So what are you going to clean it with? So after the printer's parentheses, Omar Abaye, Abaye answers, three lines from the bottom, he says, Besfas Mizruk. He wipes his finger using the rim of the vessel that is holding the blood. Kidichtiv, the pasuk that describes the vessel holding the blood is Kefore Zohav, a pasuk in Ezra Perak Aleph, pasuk Yud. And the fact that the vessel holding the blood, the receptacle vessel for the blood, is called kfore. Kfore means to cleanse. Just like we use the word Yom Kippur, a day of atonement, it was a cleansing of sins. The vessels were golden vessels. They were made of zav, of gold. They're called kefore. They're called the cleaning vessels. And so, cleaning for what purpose? For the purpose of cleaning the finger from the residue blood after each sprinkling. Now, thanks to the brackets, we can appreciate what is going to happen. The Gemara asks, "Umi Omar Rabbi Elazar Hachi?" But in order to see what the question is going on, you must use the markings. First of all, we have an arrow in the to the immediate right hand side of the Gemara text, and we mentioned this before. We also, and that points up to the point in the Gemara that was right before the bracketed section. So, in order to identify what this question is going on, we say it is referring to Rebbe Lozer's comment right before the curlicue bracketed section. So the Gemara asks, "Umi Omar Rebbe Lozer Hachi?" And we could point out that we have a long question marking as well that starts here. You can see to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, a kuf that's encircled, and this long question will continue down the first few lines of Daf Ches Omid Aleph. So the Gemara asks, "Umi Omar Rebbe Lozer Hachi?" Did Rebbe Lozer say that by the dam there's no sanctification in parts? In other words, if you receive in one vessel enough blood for 3 hazals, and in another vessel enough blood for 4 hazals, when you need 7, that would not be acceptable. Vo'itmar. But we have the following teaching. Chavite Kohen Gadol. This is a reference to a daily meal offering that the Kohen Gadol would bring. The amount was an isoron. It was offered in 2 parts, part in the morning and part in the afternoon. Rabbi Yochanan Omar, Eino Kedosha Lechatzoyin. The Chavite Kohen Gadol is not sanctified in parts. In other words, the entire Isaron, the entire quantity of flour, must be brought and put in a vessel at once. Rebbe Lozer, who is of greater concern for our sugya, because we're asking on the consistency or the accuracy of his shita, Rebbe Lozer says, "Mitol shekerv lechatzoyin, since it's offered in parts, kedosha lechatzoyin, it can be sanctified in parts as well." Now, ve'im Esau, if it's so that blood is not sanctified in parts, leilof midam, why doesn't he learn from dam to say that the Isaron of the Chavite Kohen Gadol is also not sanctified in parts? We have a bracketed section, and the purpose of these brackets is to enable you to see the answer immediately. Mincha mi mincha yolif. Rebbe Lozer is willing to learn halachas of mincha from other halachas of mincha, and that is actually what's discussed in the bracketed section, where we see that Rebbe Lozer is willing to learn topic B from topic A, provided they're both in the same realm. However, mincha midam lo yolif. Rebbe Lozer will not learn halachas of mincha, like the Chavite Kohen Gadol, from halachas that pertain to the blood. So it may very well be that by the blood it's not kodesh lechatzoyin, like Rebbe Lozer said earlier. That does not restrict him from saying, in the case of the Minchas Chavitin, that it can be sanctified lechatzoyin. Let us go over the bracketed section, starting with the top line, the phrase, ve'im isa, if it's so that dam is not sanctified lechatzoyin, like Rebbe Lozer originally claimed at the point in the Gemara before the original long brackets on Zayin Mabez, if that's so, then leilif, then let him learn the din of the Chavite Kohen Gadol midam, from the way he views dam. Just like by dam, it's not kodesh lechatzoyin, the isaron that's brought, if it's not brought in one shot in its entirety, it too should not be sanctified. The brackets now. The chitema Rebbe Lozer milsami milsa lo yomar. You might say that Rebbe Lozer does not learn one topic from another. Namely, you might say he's not going to learn the halachas of chavite kohen gadol from dam. Well, but we see that he learns one topic from another. V'ho Omar Rav Elazar, mincha shekamtza behechal ksheira. A mincha that's brought into the enclosed part of the Beis HaMikdash, the Heichal, and a kamitza is removed from the bowl containing the mincha while in the Heichal. That's okay. Even though standard procedure would have you taking the handful from a bowl while in the Azorah, in the courtyard, but he is saying that if it's taken from a bowl while in the Heichal, that's okay. Shekein motzinu besiluk bozichin. We in fact see a form of kamitza taking place in the Heichal. We spoke about this much earlier today. That's with regard to the removal of the bozichin from the lechem haponim, from the shulchan lechem haponim, which was in the Heichal. So we see that Rav Elazar is willing to learn one topic from another, namely the topic of standard kamitza in menachos from the topic of siluk bozichin by the lechem haponim. The Gemara responds, Mincha li mincha yalef. Two different topics, two different examples within the same topic of mincha, he will learn. Namely, he'll learn the halacha of kamitza in the Hecha from the halacha of siluk bozichin, which takes place in the Hecha. However, mincha, the din of chavite kohen gadol, mitam, from the halachas of blood, lo yalef. And therefore, Rav Elazar can say on the wine and dam is not kodesh l'chatzoyin, but the isaron of the minchas chavitin can be kodesh l'chatzoyin. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.